maybe it was a mistake and I should start the Christmas messages in November. But because it was still November, I decided to keep going with the life of Jesus in the book of Matthew. Before our Thanksgiving praise service, with many participants, nine groups, we had been studying Jesus' death on the cross and these events in the city surrounding his death on the cross. It was dark from noon till 3. There was an earthquake. The veil in the temple split from top to bottom. And that would be a supernatural event because this veil was very thick. And as in the Old Testament, a handbreadth. And tearing open the veil to the Holy of Holies is God's way of showing you can now go to God. It used to be only the high priest and only once a year could go to the presence of God in the Ark of the Covenant. Only on Yom Kippur, only on the Day of Atonement. And after Jesus' death, the worship system changed from the temple and Judaism and the law to the church. All believers are now priests. All can go directly to God and ask Him for things. We need not be a descendant of Aaron, Moses' brother. Matthew is the most Jewish of Gospels. All these Old Testament quotations about fulfilled prophecy. Yet, Matthew will end with a great commission, go into all the world and give the good news to every nation. And in the middle of Matthew, Jesus had already said in chapter 16, verse 18, I will build my church. And to paraphrase, even Satan can't stop it. His way of saying is the gates of Hades will not prevail against it, which means the church will be banging on the gates of Hades. We'll take care of Satan eventually. In the most Jewish Gospels, the next verse gives a Roman. And yet we went past it on purpose 2 weeks ago. We come to Matthew 27 and verse 54. Now the centurion and those who were with him, keeping guard over Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and the things that were happening, became very afraid and said, truly, this was the Son of God. The guards, centurion kind of the officer around the guards, could see the supernatural events. It was dark for 3 hours in the middle of the day. There was an earthquake. And they had not seen the ripped veil, the guards out there at Calvary, but they would hear about it. They would hear all these religious people saying it was torn top to bottom. Some even saw people where the cemeteries were open. And there was a reference to Old Testament believers coming alive again. So, this guy is hearing about these things and seeing the darkness, feeling the earthquake, listening to Jesus talk. He comes up with this conclusion. Matthew, the most Jewish book, begins with non-Jews and ends with non-Jews. It's in between it. Matthew began with the Magi, the wise men. They were not Jewish. And Matthew closes with a Roman officer. A centurion would be like a captain or a major. The beginning and the end were non-Jewish, although the book is the most Jewish, but the beginning of it and the end of it, and go into all the world and preach the gospel to every nation. Also, at the beginning and end of the book are references to Jesus being God's Son. The angel Gabriel told Mary, he will be great and be called the Son of God. Luke 1:32, he would be called the Son of God, but also in Matthew. In Matthew 1:23, the angels talk to Joseph. Behold, the virgin shall be with child and shall bear a son, and they will call his name Emmanuel, which is God with us. At the beginning of Matthew, God is with us. At the end of Matthew, we have this reference. Truly, this man was the Son of God. So Gentiles at the beginning and the end of the most Jewish book, and Son of God at the beginning and the end of the most Jewish book. The centurion saw the supernatural events. Listen to Jesus saying, Father, forgive them. Most ordinary people don't talk like this. But really, an ordinary person doesn't make the promise, today you will be with me in paradise. So after listening to all of this and after seeing the events, truly this man was the Son of God. After Jesus' arrest in the garden, the disciples all ran away. But the women would be witnesses to Jesus carrying the cross to Golgotha, or Latin again, Calvary. The women were then at the cross in the next section. There will be a reference to the Apostle John showing up eventually at the cross with Mother Mary. That's in John 19, 25, and 26. So one of the apostles did show up. But the women at the cross, most of the time, verses 55 and 56. Many women were looking on from a distance who had followed Jesus from Galilee while ministering to them. Among them was Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Verse 55 says there were many more. They wanted to see Jesus. There were no less than 4 to 6, probably as many as 8. Some are unnamed, because we don't have 8 names if we do all of the Gospels. Many different women. Many of the interesting thing here is how many Marys were there in this list. Some of the Marys in the other gospel list, the same Mary? Or were they all different Marys? Those that we know for sure is Mary Magdalene. She's here, the first one, and that's quite in all the lists. She was from the town of Magdala, which is by the Sea of Galilee. And the archaeologists sort of know that place right now. So she's from there. The movies that make her a wild woman and a prostitute, that's not in the Bible. But the Bible does say Mary Magdalene was demon-possessed. And Jesus healed this Mary Magdalene up in Galilee, who is coming down now with the cross. And in Luke 8 and Mark 9, she had 7 demons, and Jesus healed her. Number one name, Mary Magdalene, the formerly demon-possessed lady. Number two name, in verse 56, Mary, the number of James and Joseph. This is probably the mother of one of the apostles called James the Lesser. There were 2 James apostles, but one is James the Lesser. This is probably his mother. Number 3 in the list is the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Zebedee was in the fishing business. And his mother came to see them on the cross. If we link the list of the mother of Zebedee to Jesus' aunt, other references say Jesus' aunt was there. If we link Jesus' aunt to the mother of the sons of Zebedee, then James and John were cousins. This is not for certain, but it's very commonly accepted that James and John were cousins, and that Jesus' aunt at the cross was their mother of the sons of Zebedee. James and John, probably cousins. James is going to be beheaded quite early in the book of Acts. And then John, he lived to be a long time, and we have all his books, Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, Book of Revelation. Verse 55, these women ministered to him, diakoneo, so kind of like deaconesses. The apostles were all men, but the deaconesses have these ladies. Ladies in Luke 8 were Susanna and Joanna. We don't know whether they were in this list, but they're named in the book of Luke. We don't know whether they were at the cross. Joanna is interesting because she is the wife of Herod's treasurer. So the wife of the treasurer of the evil Herod was a believer at a very early time. They showed loyalty to Jesus to come to the cross. They showed courage to come to the cross. And God honored them by putting their names in the Bible. And here we are in 2025 talking about them. Later, the Apostle John and Mary, but here were the ladies first. Jesus died on the cross about 3 o'clock. Now, verse 57 talks about nighttime. We go to the nighttime now, verses 57 through 60. When it was evening, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who himself had become a disciple of Jesus. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate ordered it to be given to him. And Joseph took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had hewn out in the rock. And he rolled a large stone against the entranceway of the tomb and went away. Jesus died at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That was the same time the Judeans were killing the Passover lambs. The Galileans had Passover on Thursday night. And so Jesus and the apostles had a correct time for the Galilean Passover. But at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the Judeans, like the chief priests, they would kill the lamb at 3 o'clock. They are worried that it's getting to be Passover and you have all these bodies on the cross. And they want to get them down and get them buried. They want to have that done before it's time for the banquet. The exact day of Passover changes from year to year, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It changes from year to year. John 19:31 says the year of the crucifixion was, quote, a high Sabbath. So it wasn't just Saturday the next day. It was the Passover day for the Judeans the next day. It was a high Sabbath. We want them to all be dead. We want them to all get down. We want that to be, shall we say, cleaned up. To kill them, they would break their legs, as in the previous context. When they found an ossuary of a crucifixion victim in 1968, he had nails in his ankle and a broken leg. Jesus was already gone. They did not break his legs. That would fit the Passover lamb type, as in Exodus 12. Could not have a broken bone in the Passover lamb, and that fit. They also pierced him in the side. That fit Zechariah 12:10, they will look upon me and they will pierce, they will look upon me whom they have pierced. So Zechariah 12:10 is interesting because they will look upon God. That's in the context. They will look upon God, but God has to be pierced. The Apostle John said he saw this. He saw water and blood going out, which we did mention last time. The separation of water and blood does show definitively death. It was not the case that Jesus passed out, then they put him in the tomb, and he came back again. That's called the swoon theory. That's not possible. The separation of blood and water showed that he genuinely died. Pilate wanted to agree to get him down before the Passover. It says that his grave was assigned with wicked men, Isaiah 53:9, yet he was with the rich man in death. The authorities would have just buried him like a criminal. But the fulfillment of with a rich man in death is by Joseph of Arimathea. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John all mention Joseph of Arimathea, rich, a member of the Sanhedrin. Mark 5:43 says a prominent member of the council. I imagine when they had the trial for Jesus in the house, illegal in the house, in the middle of the night, not in the temple. I think they didn't invite anybody that would vote no, let Jesus go. So Joseph of Arimathea was probably not invited to the trial. It does say that he was a secret member of a secret disciple in John 19. He was a believer but didn't say very much about it. Now that will change. He's no longer going to be secret. They had killed Jesus on the cross, and now he's coming out that he was a Christian. So it should say that Arimathea, they know the place of it, and it's near the Ben-Gurion airport. So if a person flies into Israel, they nearly always go near what the town would be, Arimathea. But he wanted a tomb in the big city. A tomb in Jerusalem. So let's go ahead and keep reading after we have the women sitting at the tomb. Verse 61. And Mary Magdalene was sitting there, and the other Mary sitting opposite the grave. They knew where the grave was. One of the oppositions to the resurrection day was they went to the wrong tomb. Well, the biggest objection to that is if they went to the wrong tomb, Jesus was still in the right tomb and they would have turned it into a museum. So they didn't go to the wrong tomb. They went to the right tomb and it was empty. So they went to the tomb and they're sitting opposite the grave and the women saw Jesus die and they knew the exact place. And they will go back to it in chapter 28 and find it empty in chapter 28. In John 19:42, it says the tomb was near the cross. The probable location of the cross is in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is kind of odd in that it has, here was the cross, here was the tomb. Inside the same building. It's a little bigger than our church is, but walk over here and here's where the cross was. This goes back to about AD 120. Here's where the cross was, and walk over the other side of the church, here was the tomb. And Gospel of John does say it was nearby. We continue with the chief priests and Pharisees asking for a security guard. Verse 62. Now on the next day, the day after the preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together with Pilate and said, Sir, we remember that when he was still alive, that the deceiver said after 3 days, I am to rise again. Therefore give orders for a grave to be made secure until the third day, otherwise his disciples may come and steal him away and say to the people, he has risen from the dead. And the last deception will be worse than the first. Pilate said to them, You have a guard. Go and make it as secure as you know how. And they went and made the grave secure, and along with the guard they set a seal on the stone. Jesus had predicted that he would be killed, buried, and rise again. His enemies knew this prediction. We have two sides coming together to say, do something about it. The chief priests were the liberals, and the Pharisees were the arch-conservatives. The chief priests, the liberals, hated Jesus. The Pharisees, the arch-conservatives, with all these man-made rules, they hated Jesus. So you have both sides, both extremes coming together to hate Jesus. We had Ken read about Jesus' prediction that he would be killed and rise up again. He said it over and over. Here are some Matthew quotations. Matthew 16:21, he will be killed and rise again the third day. That was 16:21. 17:23, they will kill him and he will rise again the third day. Matthew 20:18-19, behold, we are going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and scribes. They will kill him and hand him over to the Gentiles to mock and scourge and crucify him, and on the third day he will rise up. So there's at least three of them previously in Matthew, others in the parallel Gospels. Both conservatives and liberals knew Jesus' prediction that he said he would rise again to stop any claim of he rose again by body stealing. They want the guards to be set there. Guards is only in Matthew 27. Reference to possible grave robbing is only in Matthew 27. Reference to giving a bribery to the guards to say they stole his body is only in Matthew 27. Pilate gave orders, make the grave secure. You have a guard. Well, a minority say you have your own guard. But given the message of the centurion at the cross, most interpret it, you have a Roman guard. We had guards at the cross. Now you can have guards at the tomb. The soldiers made the grave secure, a large stone. It was rolled down, usually an incline, and then blocked. This makes the claim that they made noise and stole the body while we slept impossible. It would not be possible to sleep with pickaxes and animals and ropes and pulling a very heavy stone up. So not possible to sleep while there was any theoretical grave robbing. Can't say we could stay in secret and in quiet and sleep. They put a seal on it. Now, in addition to rolling down the incline, a seal would probably be a wax string. A string tied with wax on both sides. One side would be on the cave, the other side on the stone. A Roman insignia would stamp it on both sides. And it would be the death penalty to get inside, not only body stealing, grave robbing, but the death penalty to break a seal made by the Romans. The Jewish penalty was they would set them on fire while they were sleeping. That's in Revelation 16:15, telling us to stay awake while Jesus is coming, keeping his garments. So the Jewish people, they would set sleeping guards on fire. And here in the Roman situation, if they slept, they would have the death penalty. Breaking a seal would be the serious offense. There is a Nazareth decree. Now, all of the archaeology books have a reference to the Nazareth decree. This time I reviewed it from Answers in Genesis. That's our creation science people, but they had references to the Nazareth decree. And the Nazareth decree is a little square block. It says there shall be no grave robbing under the penalty of death. And it was believed its origin was in Nazareth. Matthew opened with Gentiles, non-Jewish people, wise men. Matthew will close with Gentile, Roman centurion, and then say, go into all the world and give the gospel to every nation. Matthew opens with the angels telling Joseph, Jesus will be Emmanuel, God with us. And Matthew closes with the centurion saying, this man is the Son of God. So it opens that he's the Son of God. It closes that he's the Son of God. The apostles were men, but many ladies were, shall we say, deaconesses. Mary Magdalene from Galilee, demon-possessed. Seven demons, say the other gospel. Mary, the mother of James, probably the second apostle named James, not as well known. The mother of the sons of Zebedee. And other parallels say Jesus' aunt was there. If the mother of the sons of Zebedee was this Jesus' aunt, then James and John were cousins. Not proven, but a lot of people think this is true and think that the Apostle John was a cousin, and that's why at the cross Jesus told maybe his cousin, but the Apostle John, take care of mom. Joseph of Arimathea was rich. He was in the council. He was prominent in the council. He had been secret. He had been quiet. That was the end. He was going to go out and show that he was a believer. The women knew the correct place of the tomb. They were there in verse 61. They will not go to a wrong tomb. They will go to the right tomb in the next chapter and see it empty, which we will do in a few weeks after several Christmas sermons. The musicians, please.